the contribution of what you do is so different than what a commercial composer like myself or anybody else is doing. To a certain degree, I find it more significant, and you know, I mean that very sincerely. But you do, yeah. Now I'm just curious to hear what brings an individual to want to do that, because we all do music to entertain others, but I think you take it one step further.
Oh, yeah. Entertainment is the very first, most outer, shallowest skin. And that's fine, but that's like the orange peel.
Sure.
The real orange is how music affects our spirits. It's the language of the spirit for me. And music can open a window to the spirit when nothing else can. For me, I mean, it's all very personal,
Sure.
but I feel very strongly about that. So it's not about impressing my audience or proving my worth to people. It's about, and I'll, actually, when I'm singing really well or playing really well, it feels like I'm channeling. Not like, it's not necessarily coming from me, it's coming up through me. The music is all powerful. And I don't completely understand it, and I'm okay with not completely understanding it, which drives most people nuts, but it's a mystery, and I love that it's a mystery. And I love that weaving together strands of invisible air that happen to be vibrating at a certain, wavelength and frequency can cause such profound physical, emotional, and spiritual reactions. That's magic. And who wouldn't want to focus on that part of music making?
So we are magicians.
On a good day. On
And
a bad day, we forgot our marked cards or something. I don't
right, the thief got
know.
busted on a bad day. I can see. No, I see that. So I'm curious, how did the whole start, like, when did it start out with music? Did it start when you were a child, or?
I got started in music because my dad is an absolute sucker for garage sales or church rummage sales or any place where he can find a good deal. And when I was 5, he bought a piano and didn't tell my mother. And I remember very distinctly, the borrowed pickup backing up to our driveway and the piano being offloaded and my mother shrieking, "Melvin, where are we going to put this?" And the piano came in, and I've seen enough kids with pianos to know that the usual thing is bang, 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 and then they walk away. And I didn't do that. I stood there and I picked out 3 notes, which I later learned were C, D, and E, and I just started creating patterns. And I spent a long time at it. And it just, I was just fascinated. So my parents, bless their hearts, got me into lessons right away when I was 5. So I started with piano lessons and continued somewhat reluctantly through most of my childhood. I was also very fortunate in that one of my seminal piano teachers when I was young was also the church organist. And what was so great about that is that she provided me opportunities to perform from a very young age. I think I was 10 or 11 when she got me up in front of people playing. And the accolades I got from that were enough to keep me going when, laziness and lack of discipline made me want to quit. So that kept me going until I turned into, an angst-ridden teenager. And then the music and my ability to play it finally matched up in a way that allowed me to vent. And it was then it became emotional and meant something more to me. But even so, when I went to college, I wasn't sure what to declare as a major. I was either going to go into some social studies or music. And really, kind of because I just didn't want to feel lame by going in as an undeclared major, I went with the music and then realized how little I actually knew, despite all the years of theory books that had been given me and, despite all the piano recitals and performances I had the chance to be in, wow, I was really ignorant. And then I was really challenged. And part of it was just a stubborn desire not to let it best me. I mean,
Sure.
music is really, it's the cruelest mistress of all in terms of being exacting, to get where you want to be. You have to put a lot more time in as a musician than I can think of almost anything else.
I agree.
Yeah, you'll never perfect it.
No, I agree with that. I think for me in particular, the biggest beast I've seen, and I'm not a musician as you know, but the biggest beast for me so far has been orchestration,
mm-hmm.
which is an entire science of its own, and it's immensely complicated because it's not just writing for one voice, it's for many, many different voices.
Right.
Each have different colors, blah, blah, blah. And I think that for me, and it's just one example, and then there's the whole mad, you know, learning just one instrument deeply, like the violin, is an unforgiving beast.
Yeah, I had a very love-hate relationship with the piano as a young woman. I used to dream of my college professor wrapping wire around my fingers and then sending me out on stage, that kind of thing.
Sure.
I practiced 4 or 5 hours a day. I mean, I was, you know, I worked hard.
Sure.
But I never got beyond that outer skin, really. I mean, the moments of, you know, personal ecstasy were very few and far between.
Sure.
And I was really worried about performing well at the master class or
sure.
what piece I could pull off respectably. And I wasn't the best player in the department. You know, there's always some prodigy that's better than you. That's another thing. If you have to be the best, don't be a musician. Because
oh, no.
There's so many amazing geniuses out there
totally
that
agree.
Keep you in your place.
Oh, absolutely. I think yeah. the more, and I think it goes to your point as well with ignorance. Like in the beginning, like you're just like, I'm pretty good at this. I got it
uh-huh.
down. And then you meet somebody who's so outrageously more skilled. And there's,
right.
I think for me, the notion is there's always somebody who's better, but at least for me, that it's not... And also, I know it's worse in the classical world, there's a lot of competition, but for me, I think it's, as I mature as well, that the competition becomes more internal.
Oh, yeah, competition is always internal, I mean, for the most part. And I'm very competitive, or at least was,
mm-hmm.
till I grew out of it. But that took a long time.
Sure.
So the piano was kind of push-pull, you know, and I was a composition major. That's what my MM, or my... BM, whatever I have is in. Good grief. And that was fun. I found that I had a mind for theory, and I did very well in all my composition and theory classes. That's where I excelled. Music history, oh my God, that's like doing taxes. It's horrible. That was not my gift.
How can you be gifted in music?
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know. But I loved music theory. I loved untangling the music and finding relationships. My very favorite subject of all the many, 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 many years of schools that I had was 16th century counterpoint. I loved that class. It was so full of rules that I was able to operate. Because as a composer, when you have like the whole universe to draw from, you just get overwhelmed and stymied, or at least I do.
Sure.
I have to have a specific, you know, if I'm working within a
yeah.
channel, then there's room to be creative within that. A glass of red wine and my 15th, you know, 16th century counterpoint homework was like the best time of my life. I just loved it. Yeah.
I think I can only speak for myself. I certainly do not have the same theoretical background as you do, or in music theory. But I think as we grow more proficient in the language, we also start relaxing more. I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
In the beginning, you need to have framework and structure.
I'm still working in that relaxation thing.
Right.
I mean, it's the pressure to push towards perfection is so intense that it's
right.
really hard to overcome.
It might be different as well because you're a musician. I'm a composer. I've learned to be completely relaxed with it and purely stop using my mind for evaluating the results, but purely use my ear. So in the process, whatever sounds great is great. It doesn't matter how it was made.
And that's fabulous. That's fabulous. I'm getting there.
Well, I think for me,
that's something I aspire to.
Yeah, but it's a. I think you're on many levels way more gifted than I am. But I think it's a confidence issue as well.
Yeah. Well, I remember
we were exchanging
compliments at the beginning of our relationship, and I remember picking the adjective courageous for you. I just thought that was, you know, just your attitude. Just go out there, do it, and make it sound great. It's like, oh my God, there's so many voices inside me that are like, yes, but it's not as good as so and so, or so and so is going to criticize it because it's not within the.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, there's so many reasons to sabotage yourself.
I agree with that. I think one of the hardest things I find with music, and this is becoming increasingly worse with age, is the inner critic. constantly. Because in the past, I could do something and be fairly comfortable with it. It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like for a month or two, it was reasonable. And now it's instant punishment.
Oh my gosh.
The second I do something.
I couldn't listen to my first CD for 7 years. How's that for inner critic?
No.
Really, I just couldn't bear to hear it.
But isn't that the best sign of us evolving and becoming more than we are?
It is. I just hope that all the young kids that are under my tutelage aren't hampered by that fear that is inflicted, you know, through the classical, you know, the Russian school of pain or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I would love for them to come out of my tutelage feeling free to try. I heard a wonderful quote. I don't even know who said it, but if you don't screw up, you're not trying hard enough. Because if you play it safe, you're never going to progress. So
I like that quote. That's good.
Isn't that good?
Yeah, that's good.
So, I mean, I'm a very private person, despite the way I'm blabbing right now. But it's hard to be vulnerable. And when you sing, it's not as bad as acting. You will never catch me on the stage. That is just so vulnerable to make that convincing. You just have to lay your whole inner guts out there for everyone to see. And I'm not comfortable with that. But with music, I'm getting closer to a point where I can let myself out and not hyper-criticize everything that comes out of my mouth and think of it in the term of the larger flow of the song or the larger flow of the phrase and not cringe and die a horrible death for all the little wiggles. And
so you obviously evolved through time. You did your...
A long time.
You did your school.
I did my school. I got my degree and then I went to UCLA. They have a film scoring class. And I met some really fine composers there and, you know, had excellent racquetball with them and got in their lives and what have you. And realized that film scoring was so not what I wanted. I knew I wanted to have a family and that film scoring was completely incompatible. By the time the film got to the composer, it was 3 months late, and it was not uncommon for me to watch my friends stay up for 3 days in a row, you know, just cranking out, you know, this stuff and living in absolute panic and fear and dread. And I mean, to create under those conditions was just, it was too much for me. I backed away. And
I share your pain.
Yeah, it was... I appreciate it, and I have a real appreciation for a film score more than, you know, someone who never went through those classes.
Sure.
I have a better understanding of what went into making it.
Yeah.
But I tip my hats from a distance. You know, good for you. You go. And then I guess the next really big window for me was discovering traditional music and Celtic music, because I discovered probably in my later 20s that I actually had a voice. I didn't really know.
Uh-huh.
I was at that time an accompanist, a staff accompanist at a Cal State University, and I played for a lot of kids getting their lessons, and I just absorbed everything these teachers said and went home and tried it in my shower and was pretty pleased with the results. So one night I threw one Celtic tune into a classical set with my flute partner, and that was the only tune that anyone wanted to talk about after the show. Was, you know, oh, that was great. That was so cool. And I'm like, ding, 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 ding. Okay, it's so much more immediate to sing than to play, especially when I was coming from the piano, where I was coming off of all these years of college angst and what have you. To sing is really much more direct.
Uh-huh.
And when you're lucky enough to have the gift of a decent voice, it's really gratifying, you know, and I, you know, really learned as I went along. It was one of those situations where you're dropped in the middle of the ocean with a yacht kit and you put it together while you're in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of trial and error, a lot of, you know, embarrassments and cracks and out of tune things. But I just kept at it because I loved the music and decided to, you know, dive into the languages because I wanted, really as a sign of respect for the canon, for the music, because you would never sing an art song in translation. That's just not done. And I was classically trained, so of course I'm going to do it in the original language.
Sure.
And then there's this little part of my personality that actually really enjoys the treasure hunt aspect of finding someone who speaks Manx and arranging a lesson, you know, and meeting the people that taught me how to pronounce these songs. Just really dear and wonderful people that have really enriched my life. Mm-hmm. And it's just a wonderful journey that I never get tired of, so mm-hmm. I keep doing it. But yeah, it's great stuff. The Celtic music just kind of goes around all of that perfection, classical stuff that I didn't need anymore.
I think it's a lot. I mean, you obviously know way more about this than I do. But what I gather from this way of singing is that it's more natural and free, and it's more on the expression side than on the perfection side or the technical side. Even though there's a lot of technique in it, it occurs to me that it's truly about the act of expressing whatever this song is about.
Yeah. Well, the art song is often based on very high poetry, which is so intellectual after a point that you don't even really feel what you're singing about.
Sure.
You know, or you were worried about the production, not about what you're conveying.
Sure.
But these Celtic words, oh my God, they're just so strong and in your face and just emotionally naked,
mm-hmm.
that you have to live them to make them sing.
You're making me think. I think when you, at least for me, and this may be because I'm somehow a simple being or whatever, but when you speak to the soul or sing to the soul, it somehow needs to have a simplified message.
Well, it really came home for me after my first Scottish games by myself. And I did my little set, you know, I was a new harper and these songs were all new to me.
And you're not a harpist.
No, I'm a harper. A harpist plays a classical pedal harp and a harper plays an Irish harp.
Like I prefer me. The harper.
I like that that term. It's good. Anyway, I got off the stage and this ancient Scottish lady came up to me and I was certain she was going to slap me for mispronouncing something. And she just said, "Dear, your music grabs me heart."
Oh,
and I was
my
like,
God.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't want to grab people's minds. I mean, that's
no.
fine and that's good. And people make a living at it. And it's a fine higher brain thing. But they can have it. I want to grab the heart. And this music for me really does that. And that's what music should be for, in my humble opinion. I mean, I still love classical music, and I still play it a lot.
I think the best classical music is able to do that in its highness as
exactly.
well.
Exactly, exactly.
But that is where it gets very, very hard, right? When theory and all the wonderful, complicated things become so ethereal that they start communicating these more.
Yeah, there's some music that you have to learn to love. I mean, they're acquired tastes, like
sure.
cigars, scotch, and, you know... Shostakovich or something. I don't know. Maybe he's palatable. Hindemith. There. Hindemith is not palatable to anybody except viola players. You have to learn to like him. And you can. And it's a worthwhile pursuit. But I really don't want to be in that rarefied atmosphere where, you know, you have six experts trying to please each other. I love the mass appeal of these melodies. And they affect what I want to affect, which
mm-hmm.
is how people are feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it conjures all sorts of emotions for almost everyone who hears them.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Also, my voice works with them. I mean, it would be fun to do the American Idol thing, you know, and belt it out and live the Vida Loca and all that stuff. But my voice just doesn't go there. It's always had this clarity that is really prissy in pop.
If Susan Doyle or Boyle, which she's
called.
Oh,
she's so awesome. My husband's totally in love with her. He like has watched that video 50 times.
Yeah, I think she's hot.
He's following her career. She was on the front page of Google when I signed on this morning.
She's on Larry King this morning as well.
Was she really?
Yeah, she's a darling.
She's wonderful.
She needs her first kiss soon, I'll say though.
It's got to be coming soon.
Yeah, you think
with
so?
All this notoriety, oh yeah.
Yeah, you think there's an elderly gentleman that...
I think there's somebody out there for Susan, absolutely.
Got some sympathy for
her. And I think the whole world will cheer.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
With the possible exception of Pebbles, her cat, who's
yeah.
had her sole attention.
No, I think it was wonderful, and I actually think she's actually interesting in context of what we're talking about, because she may not be the best classically trained singer, but she had the expression and she reached people with it, you know, despite of how she looked or how she acted or whatever.
Exactly, and I love that. I love that that can still happen.
Yeah.
That it doesn't have to be a MTV package.
No.
You know, and the Celtic world isn't really ruled by that, which I really appreciate. You know, it just people wanting to hear good music.
Yeah.
So
you play the harp. You are a harper.
I'm a harper.
You sing all these wonderful melodies that have already touched me as well and many others. But you also use them in a specific context.
Yes, I think we're talking about my work in the hospital. I am one of six ridiculously blessed people who get to work at Stanford and Packard and the new cancer center at Stanford Hospital. Our mission is to roam around from unit to unit, waiting areas and bedside in people's rooms, and just offer them the gift of music. And it's a profound line of work, as you can only imagine. And deeply, deeply gratifying for someone like me, because I get to make a real difference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you play music on a stage, a lot of times people are impressed or entertained.
Mm-hmm.
But in a hospital setting where people are feeling very vulnerable and usually very stressed out, the surprise of live music can really change their perspective. I mean, really profoundly. And 1 minute they're in complete anger and grief, and then the music starts and they just remember to breathe and they can open up and, you know, embrace the good things that have happened to them as well. Or it's an incredible distraction from pain. I've had a lot of patients for whom the pain medication didn't work, but the music did. And I know it's working. I can see it working both in people's demeanor, but also in the numbers, because a lot of these people are hooked up to monitors that broadcast for the whole world to see their blood pressure rate and their respiration rate and oxygen levels. And the numbers change when the music starts, even in newborn infants. Playing in the neonatal ICU is one of my favorite places to play. And I was playing recently, and the baby next to me had been on oxygen, and the nurse came over and she said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm just playing the harp." "I've been trying to get this baby to breathe all day. This is the first time that I can turn down the oxygen because the baby is breathing more normally. It's your music. Don't stop."
Wow.
It's like, wow.
How
gratifying is that? probably 40 minutes to an hour.
My God.
Yeah. I usually play 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then move on. But if something really good is going on, then I keep going.
Of course.
And it's a lot of just playing and not really knowing what effect you're having. You have to be a person who can work on faith, knowing that it's helping. So, and then there are these just amazingly poignant, you know, sometimes painful moments, but and sometimes very joyful moments, and sometimes very hilarious moments, especially in the psychiatric wards, where the music just really changes everything and you can see it and people tell you 40 times a day. So I'm bringing magic into a sterile, you know, place, and there's just no better feeling. You know, when there's no words to say to a grieving family, the music can say it. You know, when someone is just found out they're cancer free, I can play them a jig and they jig down the hall. Literally, I've seen lots of people dance to my music. I've seen people just stop what they're doing and breathe, and we forget to do that a lot, but the music is a great reminder. So I get to do that 5 or 6 days a week, both on the harp primarily, but also I get to play some classical piano at the Cancer Center. And that's really fun for me to get to mix up the instruments and do that. So I have this ridiculously magical life that I have just been so blessed to recognize an opportunity to to say yes, to be brave enough to say yes. And I think that takes us back to what we were talking about earlier. You know, I had no idea what playing in a hospital was going to entail or be like. But I totally embraced it. You know, yes, I'll start tomorrow, and started going. And luckily the programs have built, and it's now, you know, the main cornerstone of my day-to-day career.
Sure.
So.
And how long have you been doing this?
Oh boy, 6.5 years, I think.
Wow.
I think. Something like that. I haven't kept exactly a track. 2003, it's 2009 now, right?
I think so, yeah.
The grounded musicians speak. Yeah.
God, that's a long time.
It is.
What I find profound about it, and I think this is an inspiration to me as a composer, because we work from the distance, we don't work directly with individuals, but we try to, I think all of us try to create emotion in one capacity or another, and
mm-hmm.
and send that out to the universe, and whatever, like, whether it's a diaper commercial or it's a movie or a game, whatever, it'll land somewhere probably. What I find so remarkable about what you do is that it's not only a live performance, but the audience is so receptive in a completely different level than I think people normally perceive music.
Oh, absolutely. Well, especially when you're the only other person in the room.
Sure.
You know, that one-on-one intimacy is just something most people don't get to experience, having live music played for them.
Sure.
Especially in a situation where they're laid up and maybe they can't even leave the room.
Sure.
A lot of times I have to gown up and wear a mask and, you know, sterilize myself.
Oh, you play?
Yeah, I play in isolated wards also.
Wow.
So, and I play in locked units, you know, with psychiatric patients. And I go everywhere except surgery, which is totally fine with me because
I
don't think I would do very well.
I can see that.
But it's just amazing how it changes things. Just the power to change. Changes perspective, changes mood, changes everybody's mood in the entire unit.
Uh-huh.
So when I sit up in E2, for example, just one of the random units, and start playing, at least 50 people are hearing me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't see them all because they're in the rooms. The doors might be open and they can hear. Or the nurses are, you know, milling about continuing with their work. But they inevitably always say, they all make the same gesture. It's like, when you started playing, man, it's just like that. So I'm bringing my hands down to show that the frenzy and the stress in any given room comes down, especially with a harp. I mean, a harp is ridiculously soothing. Even when I think I'm playing fiendishly, you know, difficult, fast music, jigs and reels, people still say, oh, I almost fell asleep.
Sure.
but that's great for what I do. You know, people are so stressed out there, and it's not just the patients. I mean, their families. I mean, people facing the loss of a spouse or a child, that's really hard. Seeing an adult lose an adult child, or any child, oh, that's just awful.
Sure.
Or people who are passing away who you know have a 2-year-old. I mean, how do you cope with that? And how do you offer help? Any words you could say are going to be hollow. You can help with the logistics, you know, and look for support for that person, and be there to listen is a really big asset. And it was interesting, we did a combined training between the musicians and the chaplains, and it was all about listening and don't offer advice and don't quote scripture. That's not what's needed. People need to be heard, and they need to work things out verbally, and you're just there as a witness and an empathetic receptacle kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the music fills that spot when there's nothing to say. Play,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just so profound. And I get to do that all the time.
That's fantastic.
Yay for me.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you because I think on many levels, your story has affected me and I think will keep on affecting me for throughout the rest of my career, because it has a profound nature that I've never in my entire career witnessed.
Well, I'm just so grateful to the people who keep it going,
Yeah.
the people who thought of the idea. The story over at El Camino, where I also work, is really amazing because the idea to bring live music in came from a single doctor who's a pathologist. He doesn't even deal with patients directly. He's like a microscope guy. And he just really wanted this done. And he knew that if he brought it to the hospital administration,
Sure.
it would be tabled, discussed, and never happen.
Sure.
He hired us off the streets and paid us out of pocket.
Wow.
Yeah, to get it going.
Wow.
And the response from staff and patients was so overwhelming that eventually the hospital picked it up.
Love it.
But
That's
he did it. Talk
remarkable.
about a labor of love and
Oh my
really
God,
putting your money where your heart is. I mean, so few people
That's fantastic.
would do that, And he's not a zillionaire. It's not like,
No, no, no.
it was a sacrifice for him to make, but he really wanted it to happen.
And I think that's a remarkable gesture.
Isn't that incredible?
No, it's incredible. But it's also interesting because there's been so many scientific studies done on how music affects both patients and in other type of environments. It's like a fairly established science by now. And it is interesting that because it has as you point out, you can see the numbers, it's actually rather significant in terms of healing rates as well, people rather other things, that it's almost meant from a scientific point of view, at least when I used to study this, it would be almost mandatory.
I
No, no, I know it sounds
think
neat, but
so.
it's not just music and it's soothing and pleasant to that. It actually affects people at a significant level. So keep on doing what you're
Okay,
doing.
I will. Good thing I like it.
Yeah, I
Actually, I
know.
love it. So,
Cool. Thank
yeah.
you so much. So
You're welcome.